Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, New York Times bestselling author Bill Gertz now must rename his book, his newest book, because the secret is out, Treachery, How America's Friends and Foes Are Secretly Arming Our Enemies. Now read that, France, Germany, Russia, China. Treachery, How America's Friends and Foes Are Secretly Arming Our Enemies, like Iraq and North Korea. Well, the secret's out with this explosive new book. The Weekly Standard calls Bill Gertz a national asset, and the liberal Washington Post admits he's the hottest reporter in Washington, D.C. His new book opens with Air Force Major Jim Ewald climbing into the cockpit of his A-10 Thunderbolt fighter jet. That's what we refer to as the Warthog. And he takes off from an airbase 200 miles south of Baghdad to come to the aid of the U.S. Army's 3rd Infantry Division, which was taking fire from Iraqi troops. Well, Bill Gertz, welcome to Bob Enyart Live. Bill, could you please tell us what happened next?
This is an amazing story. Major Ewald was flying close air support, and all of a sudden, his plane was hit with a missile. He said it shuddered as if hit by the hand of God. Mm. And basically, he tried to control it. He ended up bailing out. What he would find out later was that it was actually a French Roland missile that had knocked him out of the sky. And you could imagine he was pretty angry about it, as were a lot of other military officials when they found large amounts of French weaponry, some of it made in 2002.
Well, Bill Gertz, the French immediately claimed that these were weapons they sold to the Iraqis prior to 1991 when the UN imposed sanctions.
Right, and the Pentagon did a report in the aftermath of the major combat there and determined that that was false, that in fact the serial number showed that these missiles, a lot of them brand new, were made in as late as 2002.
In fact, you document, and by the way, thank you for including in the appendix of your book the CIA report that catalogs these weapons coming from our allies to the Iraqis.
Yes, it's a huge scandal, and you know it makes people mad, and it should make them mad. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, the Bush administration has tended to kind of sweep this under the rug, not wanting to upset our so-called allies. And, you know, my view is, look, we've got to hold these people accountable or this could happen again. They could be selling arms to other rogue states like Syria or Iran or North Korea.
Of course. Now, to follow through, this was a Roland missile who took out this Warthog with a $13 million plane and nearly killed one of our pilots. But we've had many U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq with the aid of French weapons and technology. Is that
yes.
documented?
And, that was a conclusion of this Pentagon report that I got a hold of. It said that foreign weapons were used against us and continue to be used by the insurgents, that is, these former regime elements and terrorists and criminals who managed to get a hold of these weapons and produce what they're calling now improvised explosive devices.
Now, the Roland French missile that took down that plane, a few days after that event, near Baghdad International Airport, our troops discovered a cache of Roland II anti-aircraft missiles.
Yes.
There were 51 of those. We've discovered a Roland III missile launcher. These are modern weapons that the French were making and selling to the to Saddam Hussein in some quantities.
Yes, and it shows the duplicity of the French government, which, of course, denied that they were selling any weapons, you know, after 1991, and that was proved to be a lie by these military people who got into Iraq and cataloged some of these arms. They have photographs of them, too. Unfortunately, I couldn't put the photographs in the book.
We're speaking with Bill Gertz, New York Times bestselling author, with his about his newest book, Treachery, How America's Friends and Foes Are Secretly Arming Our Enemies. Bill, I worked, before I was the pastor of Denver Bible Church, I worked for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company. It's quite a change in careers.
Uh-huh.
On the Apache helicopter back when it was development in development. And I remember using the night vision system, which was so neat. We'd open a hangar door in Culver City, California, and it'd be pitch dark at night and put on this infrared and look a mile away and see some guy getting out of his car. We could see the lighter, his cigarette lighter in his pocket. And so the French apparently have night sight technology that the Iraqis have used with their RPGs, their rocket-propelled grenades, and that those have killed scores of our soldiers.
Yes.
Especially lethal against Humvees, which we use to transport troops in Iraq. And this stuff is new technology that, according to the documentation you've provided, the French have sold. So far, we've cataloged about 115,000 weapons and pieces of technology that's being used against us.
Yes. And this report that I got a hold of, their conclusion was that the amount of foreign weaponry in Iraq was in the range between 650,000 tons to a million tons of weapons.
And that's about a third of the entire U.S. military arsenal.
Yes. And that the big three suppliers were Russia, China, and France. You know, to me, it was it really was treacherous to be providing this kind of weaponry to that kind of a rogue regime.
So what that tells us is this is not French technology that has accidentally found itself in the hands of Iraqi insurgents. These are weapons that the French government was selling en masse, huge shipments violating international law that they had agreed to help support a tyrant, a mass murderer.
Yes. The question comes, did the French government know about these arms transfers or the Russians or Chinese? And the Pentagon officials I talked to said that the defense industries in those countries are so closely aligned with the government that the prospect of them somehow illicitly selling these weapons is almost zero.
Yeah, and
in
the
other
quantity,
words, they had to know about it.
Yeah, the quantities are so huge. These are not being shuffled through third-party countries. These are just enormous transactions. In your book, you talk about France and these other countries placing greed over principle. And I'd like to ask you about that a bit, because it seems to me that it's not only the money. Oftentimes, it is the principle. It seems that they prefer Saddam's anti-Semitism to America and our support for Israel.
Clearly, in the case of France, Jacques Chirac had a long relationship with Saddam Hussein, brought him to Paris in the 70s, called him his personal friend, and then proceeded to sell him nuclear reactors, which the Israelis, thankfully, were bombed in 1981 and took out. But that did not stop the flow of conventional weaponry, and it continued. And it largely focused on missiles, including a lot of these Rolands, also Magic II air-to-air missiles, so that by the time the Iraq War began, the Iraqis were owed France some $4 billion. Mm-hmm. So that was a strong negative incentive for the French government to oppose the United States.
In the months and years leading up to World War II, the Germans were closely allied with the Iraqis. And I recall reading that there was a proposed Berlin to Baghdad railroad, and Hitler's Mein Kampf was simultaneously published in German in Berlin and in Arabic in Baghdad. And when we look at the French and the German leaders and we say, look, they might be motivated from greed because they're making a lot of money on oil for food, on the oil for food program, that they're literally robbing food from desperate Iraqi men, women, and children to pocket money because Saddam is using that program to get weapons. So there are a handful of leaders and businessmen who might be motivated by greed, but that doesn't explain public opinion. The general guy in the street in France and Germany who truly has been despising America and defending the genocidal Iraq.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's this situation with Iraq, I think, is so misunderstood, and people really don't fully appreciate the kind of regime that Saddam Hussein carried out. You know, the mass graves alone are testament to what kind of a horrendous regime that it was.
Yeah, for those who don't like George W. Bush's style, and our audience knows I'm not a big fan of George Bush, but I compliment him and thank him for aggressively fighting this war on terror. I think he's doing a fabulous job on it. But even if it were a madman, someone in the world, a lunatic who took out a genocidal tyrant like Saddam Hussein, the whole world should be thankful. I mean, Saddam is responsible for the deaths, according to page one of the New York Times a couple years ago, of about 1 million people have met violent deaths because of the man Saddam Hussein. And that's approaching Holocaust size.
And contrast that with what happened during the Clinton administration. There's an interesting story, and I outlined this in one of my earlier books, about a CIA guy named Bob Baer, who was assigned the task of running a covert action program to try and overthrow Saddam Hussein back in the 90s. And what happened to him was the Iranian government played a very successful dirty trick. They sent a unencrypted message, and the message said that a CIA officer in northern Iraq was trying to assassinate Saddam Hussein. The Clinton administration White House, in the person of Anthony Lake, who was a left-wing national security advisor, rather than believe or even ask his own CIA whether or not this was true, called in the FBI, believed the Iranian bogus intercept, called in the FBI and began hounding out one of the most experienced and one of the few Arabic-speaking CIA officers. Because he thought that he was violating the rules by attempting to assassinate Saddam Hussein. I mean, you contrast that, I think it's pretty stark.
Mm-hmm. Bill Gertz, you have you're probably the most well-read national security author and reporter in Washington, D.C., and therefore we're thrilled to get you on this radio show out here in Colorado. By the way, we're 55,000 watts low on the AM dial and reach into seven of our neighboring states. But I just want to plant this thought in your ear that news out this past week, September 21st, 2004, of voting in Germany, the neo-Nazi surge in German voting with the National Democratic Party receiving about the same percent of the vote as Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder received in Saxony, and this upsurge of anti-Semitism. And I really think that George Bush, our leaders, if they're going to be aware of what's happening in the world, they're going to have to recognize that there is an intense hatred of the Jews that's surging in Europe, and that's significantly affecting Europe's foreign policy and making our goals more difficult.
Yes, and in the case of Germany, I would also point out that, and I highlight this in my book, the German government has at the highest levels some of the most rabid left-wing radicals, you know, people who used to be in the streets, including the foreign minister who was shown kicking a policeman, and actually having connections with foreign terrorists. Including Carlos the Jackal. I point out that this foreign minister, Joschka Fischer, was a roommate with someone who was indicted for murder related to Carlos the Jackal's attack on an OPEC minister's meeting in Vienna.
Now, how about the Belgian candidate for parliament who brought charges against U.S. Army General Tommy Franks?
Yeah. This is another example. Yeah,
he's our war hero, and you've got Belgium with a law that says they can charge us with war crimes when we are taking out a genocidal tyrant.
Yes.
What's happened with that case?
I think it kind of highlights the whole European culture, which, if you go back, to World War II, is defeatist, and that their whole approach to national security problems is the first step is appeasement in general. I would obviously exclude the British because
right.
they've been pretty good on this, but the rest of the continent, I think, is a wasteland when it comes to dealing with threats from terrorism, and it's going to come home to them within the next few years when we've already seen some of that in Madrid.
Hmm. When public opinion around the world in European countries, in Muslim countries, has become so hostile to America, to Judeo-Christian values, I think that we can see that MacArthur in the Pacific back in the immediate aftermath of World War II was onto something when he urged 5,000 American missionaries to move to Japan. You're talking to a pastor of Denver Bible Church, mm-hmm. and America has done a lot in decades past to evangelize the world. And of course, liberals in the left here in America view that as a terrible thing. But what we're seeing now is it goes to the heart of our national security when nations are being converted en masse to Islam. And that is generating this intense hatred of anything Christian, anything Judeo-Christian, and anything Western.
Absolutely. You know, our editorial board here at the Washington Times, we recently interviewed Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, and I asked him, as I had asked him a year or so ago when we had a similar interview, why is it so difficult for the United States to fight the battle of ideas? And he acknowledged that this was the weakest area for the U.S. government in the war on terrorism, this idea of battling terrorism, Islamist terrorism, using ideas. And he explained, his explanation was, well, it's difficult for the U.S. government to deal with ideas. And what he meant was religious ideas. And my solution to that is, okay, if the government can't define this problem and use ideas against it, they should set up some kind of a outside institute, Institute for the Study of Islamist Terrorism, and then get the best scholars, religious and secular, to focus on the problem and come up with solutions. Because to me, that is ultimately the long-term solution to this war on terrorism.
In the spring of this year, a group of us from Denver Bible Church spent 3 weeks in Turkey. And we were there studying the Bible as sort of in the footsteps of the Apostle Paul, but also interacting with Muslims. The country's 98% Muslim. And the hatred of America and our policy and George Bush because he's Christian, that's the way they see it, was obvious. But we had answers, and we were able to persuade people not to move to America and register as Republicans. But we were able to persuade individuals that to turn the other way and allow Saddam to continue as the mass murderer that he was a brutal foreign policy, and that they should be thankful that America removed him, regardless
yes.
of other issues.
Absolutely.
And
right.
So we can win the discussion one-on-one, but it's as though Americans have been taught by our popular culture that we should not attempt to persuade people to our worldview, that there's something wrong with doing that, that we can only be tolerant of diversity, regardless of how destructive that diversity is.
Yes. And again, this, you know, the real issue here is defining Islamist extremism. You know, I mean, there's no religion in the world that condones the innocent killing of men, women, and children, as we've seen bin Laden and his allies conduct. If that's the case, we need to define what the problem is in clear, concise terms, and then use the ideas. Make the point to the Islamic world that this, what's going on, is un-Islamic, it's evil, and that it has to be stopped. And I think that would go a long way towards rallying international support. It's a real problem for the Bush administration because first thing they have is an overriding sense of secrecy, and that has hurt them in being able to communicate ideas. They're so afraid of leaks of information that they don't communicate very well, and hopefully if there's another Bush administration, they'll fix that problem.
We're speaking with Bill Gertz, author of the new book, Treachery, How America's Friends and Foes Are Secretly Arming Our Enemies. Bill, we only have a few more minutes. Could we talk about North Korea
Sure.
and their nuclear weapons program?
Yes. In Treachery, I have a pretty good account of what's going on there and how it started and how the North Koreans are secretly trying to obtain technology from a lot of different places, including Germany.
The famous nighttime photo of the Korean Peninsula, a satellite photo, showed, of course, South Korea with the lights on and North Korea dark.
Yes.
Their economy is such that there's no way they could have developed nuclear technology on their own. So
right.
if they're building nuclear weapons, they had to get it from the technology from somebody. What's
right.
happened?
Let me explain in a real quick way how that works. You know, one of the most alarming things I uncovered in the book was the fact that in Libya earlier this year, when Libya was dismantling its nuclear program, among the documents they found there were Chinese language design information on how to make a small warhead for a missile. This is the ultimate objective for these rogue states. It will do them no good to make a large nuclear device that can only be transported on a tractor-trailer truck. They want something small enough to go on a missile. Here you have the case where China, which stole warhead secrets from the United States, including the W-88, the small warhead, back in the 90s.
From the Clinton administration, well, on the
yes.
watch of the Clinton administration.
Yes. And that technology was then transferred to Pakistan for its nuclear weapons program. And then you see through the AQCON nuclear supplier group that that technology went to, we know, Libya because they found the documents.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're trying to find out right now is if it made its way to Iran and North Korea. And the betting is that it did.
Right. So that the threat that it's faced from North Korea can end up being far more significant than that which we faced in Baghdad.
Right. You know, the North Koreans have been engaged in six-party talks, and to me, this is nothing but a subterfuge, that this is an effort for them to buy time so that they can build these small warheads and say, look, we now have a nuclear warhead capability.
Right. They're obviously doing that. The Clinton administration bribed them with billions of dollars in support, which
yes.
was all turned out to be just a joke. They continued.
Right. And they concluded an agreement without any verification procedures. It was basically a foolish bargain to trust this failed state, this
right.
ruthless, repressive communist regime.
And it really is the leftovers of the 60s hippie movement and on our college campuses that the communists are really good guys. There's no need to verify because they're honest and they'll do what they say. And, of course, communist regimes have led to the slaughter of millions upon millions of people. But so here's a case where the Clinton administration believed the lies of the 60s that the North Korean communist would do the right thing. And now we're faced with that tyrant, one of the worst in the last century, having control of nuclear weapons. You're exposing the reality of how bad it is, how we got there. But you're a reporter, Bill Gertz. But what do you think America needs to do about North Korea?
Well, I'm a big fan of covert action. I think that if we had a better covert action capability, that we may not be in the difficult spot we are right now in Iraq. Covert action is that middle ground between sending in the 82nd Airborne mm-hmm. and using on one end and using ineffective diplomacy on the other end. And I noticed that the 9/11 Commission report called for taking away the CIA's covert action capability and giving it to the people that are better suited for it, which is our U.S. Special Forces community. I think that's the way to go. In my book, I have a proposal to set up two special operations commands, task forces, one in the Pacific, one in Europe, that can be used to deal with these kind of problems. And in fact, I even present a fictional scenario of special forces going into North Korea and taking out their underground nuclear facility.
Yeah, may God forbid that a North Korean nuke will make its way into the Los Angeles harbor and take out half of Los Angeles. And if such a thing ever happens, such a nightmare, of course, whatever administration is in the White House would be condemned for not doing exactly what you've said should be done.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that America has a hard time finding the backbone or the courage to do what's right. And part of that is because there are so many in our own country who oppose standing up for what's right. And it seems to me that the left in America, they are simply against the notion that there are good guys and bad guys. And when American stands up in righteous indignation against Islamic terrorists, there's a resentment that we even view those extremists as the bad guys.
Yes, it's this whole problem of moral relativism. You know, it's a way to blur the line between good and evil, and you know, we've got to be able to hold
right
on to that moral standard and identify that.
And could I suggest to you in the last minute we have why toward the beginning of the interview I said that while I'm so thankful to President Bush for waging this war, I'm not a big supporter of his. And it's because I view the intentional killing of innocent people as the ultimate wrong. And because he has maintained that he will continue to nominate pro-abortion judges, I've, with my audience, asked people to send the message that if George Bush will pledge to stop nominating pro-abortion judges, he would receive our vote. But when we see that moral relativism is even creeping into American foreign policy, that will fund the Palestinian Authority, which is a terrorist organization, we have a hard time keeping the moral high ground because of our own compromises.
Yes, it's an uphill battle, but it's something that has to be done.
Has to be done. And Bill Gertz, we're thrilled here at Bob and Yurt Live. We're thrilled that you're on the trail of the bad guys. Thank you for your book and for your time.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we appreciate Bill Gertz, author of Treachery, How America's Friends and Foes Are Secretly Arming Our Enemies. You'll want to get the book. It's available everywhere, and you will love it. What a read it is. By the way, Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, over 100 staff members on a beautiful campus, Christ-centered curriculum, top academics, all for your children ages 2.5 years to 12th grade. Call them at 303-431-5653. That's Maranatha, 303-431-5653. By the way, have you read our best-selling manuscript on the Bible called The Plot? The Plot, Understanding the Overview of the Bible. We think you'll love it. If you don't, it's a money-back guarantee. We also have it on MP3 CDs. You'll enjoy it. You can get it by calling us at 800-8-NYART or on the web at kgov.com.